Greet you this evening in Jesus' name. That is one passage that Brother Matt read that I agree is a little difficult for us to understand in the culture in which we live. I think the lesson there is tremendous. We've done all that is our duty to do. We're still unprofitable servants. If we can maintain that mentality and a joyfulness in that service, God has truly a blessing for us. I invite you to 1 Kings 20 this evening for another passage that has long puzzled me. If Brother Lamar would have walked up to you this morning and said, God told me to tell you to hit me hard enough in the face to either bloody my eye or blacken or break my nose, what do you hit him? Wind up and give it all you have. Whack. Would you do it? And if you refuse to do it, he would tell you that before the day's end, you will die because you have refused to hit me. That's what happened here in 1 Kings 20. We don't have time to look at this whole chapter. Title this evening, As Thy Servant Was Busy Here and There, as was mentioned, comes from verse 40. Here in chapter 20 of 1 Kings, we have one of the stories of the life of Ahab. And I don't know what first comes to your mind when you think of King Ahab. Obviously, he was not a good king. He was an Israelite king in the northern kingdom, wife of Jezebel. And Ahab and Jezebel were the root of much evil. Idolatry, they introduced Baal worship into the northern kingdom, at least officially. But yet there were times in Ahab's life where it seems like he repented, at least in a measure. And God honored him. There's some of those things that I don't really understand. We have two occasions here in this chapter, the beginning of the chapter, the end of the chapter. There's about a year's time span in between them. And what happened at the beginning of the chapter is Ahab and Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, came together in battle. Ben-Hadad had with him 32 other kings. And God, through the prophet, told Ahab that I am going to deliver you in this battle just to prove to you my strength, my power, my goodness. And he did that. Israel was victorious. And Syria went home nursing their wounds. And his advisors, Ben-Hadad's advisors, came to him and said, we've got this figured out. Their God is a God of the hills. We were fighting in the hills. Let's do a major shakeup in the army, the military command. Let's get rid of the kings. Let's put captains in their place that know how to run armies instead of these kings. And we're going to fight them in the plain. We'll win there because our gods are better in the plain. Their God is a God of the hills. While they were making those plans, the prophet came back to Ahab and said, look, mind what you're doing. Within a year, they will be back. And don't worry. We'll defeat them the second time simply because they think this is an issue. Their God's better than me, and I will prove to them they're not. And so that is what happened. In the latter part of the chapter, we have the second battle. Israel again won. They slew an incredible number of the Israelites. You come here to verse 27 gives an interesting description. As you picture these two armies, the children of Israel were numbered and were all present and went against them. And the children of Israel pitched before them like two little flocks of kids. But the Syrians filled the country. Naturally speaking, this wouldn't even be a contest. That's when the messenger came back in verse 28. Said, because the Syrians have said, the Lord is God of the hills, but he is not God of the valleys. Therefore will I deliver all this great multitude into thine hands, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. And we have a scene reminiscent of the Philistines and Israel in the days of David and Saul. 7 days without battle, and they were joined in the seventh day. The end of verse 29 says that Israel slew of the Syrians 100,000 footmen in one day. The rest fled into the city. And it was here that we have staging for this last part of the chapter. Ben-Hadad fled to the city. The Israelites followed them, a large portion of his army, and they apparently surrounded the city. They had Ben-Hadad trapped. In verse 31, Ben-Hadad's servants came to him. They counseled him, saying, look, we've heard that the Syrian kings, they're merciful. Rather humane in their treatment of prisoners. Let's just simply surrender rather than be captured. Let's surrender and see what happens. And they did that. They came to him with, Ben-Hadad sent some servants, and they talked with King Ahab, and they were very careful. They watched his speech, and they soon detected that Ahab was rather kindly disposed toward Ben-Hadad. And they latched onto that. They brought Ben-Hadad to him. Ben-Hadad offered some conciliatory terms to Ahab, and Ahab took him up on that. They made a covenant in verse 34, and Ahab sent Ben-Hadad away, fine and healthy. Here's where the part of the story that our title starts with comes from. After Ahab had sent Ben-Hadad away, I'd like to start reading at verse 35. And read to the end of the chapter. Certain men of the sons of the prophets said unto his neighbor in the word of the Lord, smite me, I pray thee. And the man refused to smite him. Then said he unto him, because thou hast not obeyed the voice of the Lord, behold, as soon as thou art departed from me, a lion shall slay thee. And as soon as he was departed from him, a lion found him and slew him. Then he found another man and said, smite me, I pray thee. And the man smote him, so that in smiting he wounded him. So the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way, and disguised himself with ashes upon his face. And as the king passed by, he cried unto the king, and he said, thy servant went out into the midst of the battle, and behold, a man turned aside and brought a man unto me and said, keep this man. If by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. And the king of Israel said unto him, so shall thy judgment be. Thou hast decided it. And he hasted and took the ashes away from his face. The king of Israel discerned him that he was of the prophets. He said unto him, thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man who I appointed to utter destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, thy people for his people. The king of Israel went to his house heavy and displeased and came to Samaria. I'm not sure what you think of this story and what occurred here, but I appreciated studying it again a little more in depth than I ever had. Just a couple interesting things about what happened here. Apparently, this prophet was known to the king because he had to disguise himself to carry out this little ruse, this little story that he made up. It says the word that's verse 38 says it disguised himself with ashes upon his head. Probably a better translation of that word ashes would be bandages. If you go into the original Hebrew, it's just ashes as we think of, but he bandaged himself up just as if he would have been wounded in battle. Part of his disguise, part of his guise goes along with his story. In verse 39, and when it says that a man turned aside and brought a man to him, that man that turned aside, the original Hebrew there would give the idea of a man of rank, a commander or general, somebody who had some authority over him as a lower soldier, and assigned this man to his safekeeping. So that's what happened here in the story. That was his story, and it doesn't really say, but it seems like in this whole story, he was looking to King Ahab, maybe for some, not necessarily sympathy, but he was looking for the king to intervene on his behalf, because it was either his life or a talent of silver. And for an ordinary foot soldier, a talent of silver would be way out of his realm to pay. It was something that there's no way he was going to be able to pay a talent of silver, so his life was on the line. And he came to King Ahab seemingly for some assistance. Is there anything that you can do for me? And Ahab's response was simply, sorry, your punishment is just. It's what was agreed on. He said, your mouth has decided it. The moral of the story, and I believe why he, if you think of the comparison, this man, this prophet, in asking another man to smite him, the normal reaction of the man that refused to smite him would have been what? Kindness? Sympathy? And here, for his refusal to carry out the act that God had commanded, in his sympathy, he spared a friend, and God took his life. Ahab, out of human sympathy, human reasoning, had spared an enemy. And if God takes the life of a man who disobeyed him and spared a friend, what more could Ahab expect if he disobeyed God and spared an enemy, one who had caused so much destruction? Moral of the story, don't let sympathy and human reasoning keep you from obeying what God says. That has a lot of applications. When we start dealing with people who find themselves involved in, I just think especially of divorce and remarriage. There's a lot of people who out of sympathy and human reasoning say, well, we need to do something other than what God has said. And this parable directly refutes that. Even for sympathy, we would say humane treatment of a friend, it went against what God said, and God judged it. That's not what we're here to look at this evening. Part of his story, we have this phrase here in verse 40. The man said that, as thy servant was busy here and there. In other words, I got involved in other things, and all of a sudden I realized that this man who I was supposed to be looking after had slipped away. He was gone. There was no way to get him back. And he found himself in a situation where there was no remedy for. He could not go back and, you know, come back here. This isn't supposed to be happening. I'd like to consider just a few principles that I believe are illustrated in this phrase. As we think of this part of the story, here he was delivered, this captive. He was given an assignment. He was given a responsibility. And it was gone. The first principle I think that we see illustrated here is that when we choose to do one thing, there's a lot of other things that we choose to let undone. We have a limited amount of time in life. And I guess the older I get, the more I realize that there's a lot of things that I could be doing that I do not have time to do. And so we face a multitude of choices in any day of what we're going to do. And we don't, at least for myself, I don't often think about it. You know, when I make the choice to do this, I'm also choosing that I will not get this and this and this over here done. That's just the way life is. And this man, we don't know what he was doing. He didn't include that in his story. I believe this is all just a parable, made-up story. He didn't say what it was. He didn't fill in those details. But he was busy. It wasn't that he was idle. He didn't lay down and take a nap and just not get anything done. But he was busy. But what he chose to do kept him from doing something else. And that is a fact of life. There is only a certain amount of things that we can actually do. And our choice to do this means that there are some other things that will not get done. The second principle I think that we can see here, that again is very true to life, is that what we choose to do reveals the priorities that we have. Because we cannot do everything. What we choose to do reveals what is important to us. And what we determine is the best to be done now. Let's go with me back to Proverbs chapter 24. As we think of things in life, I don't know if you've ever studied any of the life management courses and skills and things, and there's a lot of emphasis put on looking at your life and analyzing what is important to you in life. Dividing things up into categories. Some things are important, some things are not important. Among those things, there are things that are urgent and things that are not urgent. There are some things that are important, but they're not really urgent. I drive a vehicle that in the end of October, by the end of October, will need to be inspected, safety inspection. Well, that is important. It's important to get that done, but at this point, that is not yet urgent. It's not something that, yes, it's going to have to be dealt with, but it doesn't have to be done right now. You have a person who suffers a heart attack, or maybe an individual who is choking. Medical care for that individual is both important and it's also urgent because you're dealing with just a limited amount of time. And if you don't get it right now, that opportunity will be gone. Here in Proverbs 24, as we think of priorities in determining what gets done, what doesn't get done, one of Solomon's Proverbs, prepare thy work without, and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterward build thine house. The difference between something that is important, both these things here are important. The work in the field, that is important. Building a house, that's important as well. But the one has more of an urgency. Because you're dealing with a time factor. If you're dealing with planting and you miss the planting season, you missed it for the year. And so there's a degree of urgency that goes with it. And we see that here. The priorities that we have, how we in our mind determine what is important to us. There are some books that I have in my shelf that I would like to read sometime. And there's some that have been there for quite a while. I would consider them probably interesting reading, but at this point I have not considered them either important or urgent. And so it doesn't get done. But those choices that we make reveal our priorities. What really matters? We can say what matters to us. But really, what reveals what really matters, and more than what we say, is what we choose to do and not do. That's where we really reveal what really matters deep down in our heart. The third principle that I see here, very clearly illustrated, is that some opportunities we have but one time. There are some things that we have an opportunity to do that if we miss that opportunity, once that opportunity is gone, it's gone. Once this man slipped away, the likelihood of this soldier running around in the middle of that battle and collaring that fellow the second time was not real good. Man, he was gone. Number one, to find him. Number two, individual like that would probably be very desperate. He got caught once. He's not getting taken the second time. And so he was gone. And there are opportunities that we have that we only have once. There are some things that if I don't do them today, they'll be around tomorrow. And if I don't get to them this week, next week, maybe the next year, we can do them kind of whenever we want to. But there are things that we have, opportunities, responsibilities that we have in life that we have once. And when they're gone, they're gone. And the fourth, probably what adds a sobering element to all this, is that we are accountable for some things that will not get done unless our priorities are right. It's not that this man necessarily did something that was wrong, but by his choices, something did not get done that was supposed to get done. And he was accountable for what he had not gotten done. Sometimes we call them sins of omission, where we find ourselves in trouble not necessarily because of what we did, but because of what we did not do. As we think of this title, "As Thy Servant Was Busy Here and There," it brings into focus the fact that we will one day give an account not only of what we have done, but also of the opportunities that we have that we chose not to do, and chose not to either directly or indirectly. Did this man consciously choose to let this prisoner escape? I don't think so. I don't think we see that here. But it was rather as a result of his neglect. We'd like to look at that a little more later. But as we think of this idea of being busy here and there and something just slipping away, what are the things in life that are both important and urgent? Things that we not only have to be concerned that we get them done, but we have to be diligent in getting them done now. Because the opportunity may be gone, and once it's gone, it's gone. I'm not sure what you would list in this category. There's many things. But I'd like to consider just three general categories this evening, somewhat general. As we think of the responsibilities that we have, this soldier of rank, comparing it to Christ himself, and what he has delivered to us and said in a measure, "Here, keep this for me." You'd have this same thought in the New Testament with the parables of the pounds, the talents, where the master called his servants and said, "Here it is. This is my goods, but I want you to keep it, and in that case, use it. Put these things to work." We have some of the same similar principles. We're under the authority of Christ. He is the one who has given us these opportunities, these responsibilities. But what are some of them? What are some of the things in your life that if you're not careful, you could say the same thing that this man said, "As I was busy here and there, he was gone." Be interesting to know what you would list. As I thought about my own life, studying for this, meditating on this throughout this week, this was a very good discipline for me. I had a very, very busy week. You know, one of the first things that suffers? Our personal devotion life. And as I thought about this aspect, I think one of the first things that we need to consider is our personal relationship with Christ. Our personal relationship with Christ. Just about anybody you meet would say that our relationship with Christ is important. They want to make sure that they're right with God before they die. There's an importance that they place in that. But how many individuals really think, you know, for where I am in life, this is urgent? There's a lot of people that I've met that, well, they would like to do this first, or when I'm older. You know, someday, sometime. Right now, well, yes, it's important, but it's not urgent. Is that the way we view it? How do you view your relationship with Christ? I'm not interested in what you say about it. I'm interested in the choices that you make. Remember, that's what really tells us what we think about it. When we have the choice, what gets done first, or what do we choose not to do? tells us what we think about this. It is important. As you consider this opportunity to build and to develop, to maintain a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Yes, death may come at any moment. But I believe there's a lot of individuals who, telling themselves that it's not really urgent. There's a lot of individuals that don't face death but no longer hear the call of God's Spirit in their life, because they have said that is not urgent for so long and pushed that away. So there's an urgency. Because once the Spirit ceases to call, your day of opportunity is past. Your day of opportunity is past. As I thought about this, as thy servant was busy here and there, and this soldier may have been doing a lot of good things. He may have been helping a lot of people. He may have been waging a successful battle against other enemy soldiers. He may have been very active. He may have been, you know, a main cause in helping this portion of the army win over the soldiers they were fighting. But in the midst of that, he failed in a responsibility that had been given. As I think about this aspect, a personal relationship with Christ, I believe this relationship is gained or lost in our daily devotional experience. As I studied, I had to wonder, is it possible to maintain a spiritual relationship, a proper personal relationship with Christ, just in Sunday worship experiences? Is it possible? I don't think for myself it is. At least not what it should be. Not what it should be. Not what God wants it to be. And I trust not what we want it to be with Him as well. But as I thought about this aspect of busyness and how that we can be so busy doing good things, and yet this most important aspect of our life, we wake up one day and say, you know what? It's gone. It's gone. I'm glad for God's mercy that this is a relationship, as long as God calls us and we have life, that we can restore this relationship. We can restore this relationship. But I believe there are many people who, well, like the individuals in Matthew, where Christ says that they will arrive at the judgment and He will condemn them, and they will say, but Lord, we've done a lot of good things for You. We've cast out devils. We've done this and this and this and this and this. And He says, I don't know You. And I believe there are individuals who at one point had a relationship with Christ, but as they were busy here and there, they neglected what Christ told Martha in relation to Mary. She hath chosen the good part. She hath chosen the good part. Personal relationship with Christ. Another thing that I believe is both important and urgent is the relationship that we have, the responsibility that we have to our children. And this aspect of life, there are many that recognize it as urgent. They will tell you that children don't take children long. They grow up fast. I mean, there's no questions about that. And if you want to teach them something, why, you're going to have to do it now. And so it's not a question of an urgency. It's not a question that this opportunity is passing. But unfortunately, not many people consider it important. They grow up. They'll live. Is there really that big of a deal? Obviously, it is an opportunity that will be lost. No questions asked. But it's an opportunity, it's a responsibility that we have. We don't have time to look at all the scriptures that relate to this relationship. But I believe this relationship is gained or lost in daily communication, just like our relationship with Jesus Christ. This is a relationship that's not built properly, just with special activities once a week, twice a week, once or twice a month, where we do something special with the children. But this is something that requires daily communication, daily instruction, daily discipline. It requires a purpose and a goal. This is something I consider important, and this is something I will get done. Otherwise, it won't get done. And there's many a parent who has come to the realization that as they were busy here and there, it was gone. Now they face teenagers with some challenges in their life, and they would love to build a relationship, and for the large part, for the most part, it's too late. It's too late. It's gone. Again, God does give grace, but it's not what God intends. As I thought about this, I thought about a truth that I ran across some time ago that I think is very true. Children do not want to work for us. They want to work with us. As we think about this relationship, children do not want to work for us. They want to work with us. It's that relationship. And probably in our Western society, in our prosperous schedules, you know, we have a lot of things going. And it's one of the things that we can very easily, while we wouldn't choose necessarily not to do it, we in a sense choose not to do it because we choose to do other things in its place. The third opportunity that we have, I think we need to look at, is the opportunity for witnessing. That probably many times are opportunities that we get but once. Individuals that we meet, and the conditions are right, the Spirit says, speak to this individual. We don't have a whole lot of time to think about it, often. And if we don't do it now, the salesman turns around and he walks off. He walks away. Maybe we'll see him again. Maybe we won't. Individuals that we meet, various places, in our travels, in our day-to-day work. As we consider this, there's many people that do not view this as either important or urgent. What's he in my life? But it's important both for them and us. I'd like to go to Ezekiel chapter 33. God's message to Ezekiel that I think has its applications for us today as we think of the commitment that God has made as he has committed to us the understanding of truth. He has committed to us the message of reconciliation. And as God's people, he says, you are my mouthpiece. I want you to share the good news, the gospel, with those that you meet. I'd like to read the first 9 verses of Ezekiel 33. I'm not going to make a lot of comment. I think these verses are clear. But as we think of the urgency, the importance and the urgency of this matter of witnessing. Yes, it's a matter of life or death. There are eternal consequences for individuals who are not saved. And we have the opportunity to witness to them. We do not know what eternal difference it may make in their life. But notice that this is not only important for them, but it's important for us as well. Because of what has been committed, the trust that has been committed to us. Ezekiel 33, verse 1. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of thy people and say unto them, When I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their coast and set him for their watchman, if when he seeth the sword come upon the land, he blow the trumpet and warn the people, then whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and taketh not warning, if the sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, took not warning, his blood shall be upon him. But he that taketh warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman see the sword come and blow not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and take any person from among them. He is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood, why require at the watchman's hand? So thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth, and warn them from me. When I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die, if thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, the wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thy hand. Nevertheless, if thou warn the wicked of his way to turn from it, if he do not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Important? Yes. Very important. But as I was busy here and there, how many times have we said that? How many times have I had to admit that here I missed an opportunity because I chose to do something else? I'd like to look at two scriptures that I think relate here. Go with me to James chapter 3. So we think of this fact, coming back to the principle, that there's a lot of things that we have the opportunity to do in life. And we simply need to choose which are the most important, which are the most valuable. James chapter 3, verse 1 and the first part of verse 2. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation, for in many things we offend all. We'll stop reading there. I don't know what your understanding of these verses are. But as I understand what God is speaking through James here, this idea of being many masters is a person who tries to accomplish a lot of things and doesn't really get the most important things done. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. In other words, the more things you are responsible for, the more likelihood it is that you are going to fail to accomplish some things that are important. Is this saying that we should then sit back and say, well, if I don't do anything, then I'm okay, because as long as I'm not there are some responsibilities we cannot get out of. There are some things that we have by virtue of being the children of God, some responsibilities that we have by virtue of being parents. There are some things that are responsibilities, but the caution is this: the more we fill our life and the more we tie ourselves to this responsibility and that responsibility and something else, the more likelihood that we're going to end up where this soldier found himself. That there are some things that are going to slip through our grip that were more important, and we fail. That's the likelihood. I believe that's what he means here when he says that for many things we offend all. For many things we offend all. And as I considered my life, I mentioned earlier that the older I get, the more I realize that there's a lot of things that would be good to do that I don't have time to do. And I don't think that goes for just we as ministry. But there's a lot of things in your life that in themselves would not be wrong. There's a lot of things that maybe would have some benefit. But we need to get to the point where we look at it and say, but is this really the most important thing that I could be doing at this time? Not is it just, well, is it right? Is it okay to do? Yes, we need to consider that. But there's a whole host of things, a whole host of opportunities that we have in this land of freedom, that while there's nothing wrong with doing them, we need to look seriously at, do I really have time for this pursuit? Do I really have time for this pursuit? And I think I have to think of Brother Sidney and listening to him share in relation to some of his, well, as he looked back in his life, there were some of his, I think particularly of one of his children, that did not embrace the things that Brother Sidney embraced. As he reflected on that in his life, he reflected with sorrow that it was probably, at least in a measure, a result of him being too busy with church work, that he failed in some of his home responsibilities. Was his church work wrong? No, absolutely not. But he would admit that there were some other things that were more important that he was not getting done. And that's a choice that we need to make. It's something that we need to consider seriously. Even with all these right things that we could be doing, as we think of involvement in mission work, even involvement with relief work, while those things are good, and there's times when we need to be shaken loose from some of our other natural pursuits to see that there are some things more important than some of these natural day-to-day things. But yet we need to consider what is the most valuable, what is the most urgent in my experience. Second scripture, Luke 21. We have another very familiar parable here. Luke 21. Another similar warning. Here in Luke 21, Christ is giving some signs of some end time developments and some warnings, some cautions, conditions that would exist. Some of these scriptures, I believe, have been fulfilled, some not yet. He gave them a parable in verse 29 in relation to the parable of the fig tree. Then in verse 34, he says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, so that that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always, that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man." There's a lot in these three verses. But the phrase that I would like to call your attention to is the first part of verse 34. It says, "Take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness." And we say, well, that's obviously out of beyond limits. Those things are wrong. But notice he says then, "and the cares of this life." Take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with the cares of this life. And so that day come upon you unaware. I believe, at least as I consider my own life, too often there's too many of these natural pursuits. Too many natural pursuits that hinder my spiritual growth. Too many things, too many cares. You have similar wording with the parable of the sower. Parable of the sower, and how that the cares of this life sprung up and choked the word. Things that, yes, we need to see to. Things that we are responsible. Natural things. The condition of our houses and our lands and our businesses. We need to be concerned about those things. Because a careless, idle, indolent individual is not a proper testimony for God's people. But he says, beware. Take heed to yourself. Consider what you allow in your life. Consider the choices that you make of what you are going to do. Because remember, for what you choose to do, there are some other things that you are choosing to leave undone. You're choosing to leave undone. Too many natural pursuits. We can be overcharged with the cares of this life. Overcharged simply means you have too much that you will not get it all done. You cannot get it all done. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. He was gone. Sad testimony from an individual who will finally be standing before God in judgment. And the question, what have you done? How have you fared with the things that are really important in your life? We can only do a limited amount of things simultaneously and do them equally well. It's another thought that has impressed me time and time again. We live in a world where we have some rather amazing gadgets that lets us talk on the phone and walk around the house and do our kitchen work at the same time. But you know, we sometimes think, well, I can do this and I can do that and I can do them at the same time. And there's some things that that works for. But we can only do a limited amount of things simultaneously. And what that means is there are some times we're going to have to make some hard choices. There are some things that we would really like to do. There are some things that maybe we were really counting on doing. And we're going to have to say, you know what? I don't have time to do this. Because I cannot do that and also do justice to this greater calling that I have. And we're going to need to make those choices. And that is where we reveal what is really in our heart and what really are the values that we hold. And we can see those. Probably others, probably you can see those. Others can see those in my life a little easier than what it is for me to admit those things. Because we tend to justify ourselves when, yeah, I really wanted to, but because of this and this and this, and you know how those reasonings go. We need to be honest with ourselves and what we're doing and why we're doing those things rather than some others. We use the expression sometimes that there are things that fall through the cracks, which simply means there are things that we didn't get done that we really intended to get done. I would like to leave this challenge with you. May the things that fall through the cracks not be the things that prove to be our undoing. The things that fall through the cracks, the things that finally we would have to say, you know what? I was busy here and there, and I missed that opportunity. May those opportunities that we have to acknowledge, you know, there's an opportunity that I did not take. There's an opportunity that I miss. May they be the things that we can afford to miss. It's my prayer. Shall we kneel for prayer?